Welcome to the latest edition of the Original 11. My name is Craig Saxon, and on today's show, we will have Tom Johnson, the junior inside linebacker for the Princeton Tigers. We'll have Mike Willis, the former lineman turned tight ends coach, who looks at that group, including Graham Adamitis, who had a couple of touchdowns last weekend, and previews week 5 against Brown. We'll also have Cody Crucial for a look at both week 4 and week 5, and a little look around the Ivy League as well. Before we start, a quick reminder, you can subscribe to the Princeton Podcast Network by searching Princeton Tigers on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You'll get every episode of the Original 11, TigerCast, LaxCast, anything else downloaded directly to your phone. All right, quick look at last weekend before we get to our interview with Tom Johnson. You know, kind of a tale of three halves a little bit. No, that's not possible, but still. 10-0 start for Georgetown. Got a little scary there. I thought the defensive stand after the special teams turnover was big. Kept that to 10-0. And then, obviously, the floodgates opened for Princeton. It was good to see. You had the special, you know, the safety, the interception return for the touchdown by the now two-time Ivy Rookie of the Week, C.J. Wall. And then offense, it really took over that game. Chad Kanoff was phenomenal. Moved to second on the all-time score passing list for Princeton. And he's got a ways to go to really challenge Doug Butler, but we're going to see him move up the Ivy charts, you know, possibly into the top 20 this weekend. So a lot of good things that happened in that game, and now it's on to the Ivy League season. 6 games remaining, all in Ivy play. Princeton heads into it really with its back against the wall after that opening loss to Columbia. But if you look at the way the Ivy season has gone, Penn has a loss. Harvard has a loss. You know, Columbia and Dartmouth are the only teams without a loss. Columbia's only played one. They host Penn this weekend. Dartmouth's the team that's really gotten off to the incredible start. And they were trailing in both of their Ivy games, you know, with a minute to go. So this could be really one of the wildest Ivy seasons. But you still don't want to be that two-loss team, really, at any point, but especially this early. So big game for Princeton and Brown, and they both recognize it. So we'll see a good one Saturday, 12:30, on the Ivy League Network. Somebody who will look to have a big impact is Princeton's starting inside linebacker, Tom Johnson. Let's hear from him right now. Tom, before we get to the season, you know, it's such an interesting story. I think anytime somebody has a sibling on a team, for you, you have a younger brother, you have a cousin on the team, and I want to start actually just kind of your family. One of 4 sons, your father played football, your older brother, I believe, played at Amherst, mm-hmm. Your younger brother is now here. Was football just kind of an everyday part of your life, and you know, what was it like growing up with 4 boys? I assume it had to be fairly violent at times.
It's kind of funny because actually we my mom wouldn't let me really play, get into tackle football until we were in about the 4th grade, I think. So it just kind of happened that we, in the neighborhood kids, we had a lot of boys in the neighborhood, and we would pretty much just play full tackle backyard football, you know, sending each other into mom's trees and, you know, ripping up the grass in the backyard. And it was just something that we would do every day, and became a passion, obviously, as the pads went on and then as I moved into high school. And I don't know, it just kind of happened that that we all fell in love with the game, all my siblings. And then obviously with Sammy here, we've had some good battles during Thanksgiving games, you know, Thanksgiving football games with the cousins. We would always be matched up on opposite sides. So
your uncle played on the 86 Penn State championship team.
So. Yeah, my uncle Matt, obviously a tremendous football player, came out of the small town York Catholic High School, and was kind of the king of York Catholic, and you know, obviously had a successful career at Penn State, and Sammy is following in his shoes, trying to make a name for himself here.
You know, I talked about this with Mark Fassati for a piece earlier. He also one of 4 boys. How much does competition become part of daily life? You know, you got to, I assume, fight for almost anything. And how much does that kind of become part of your, I don't know if it's your personality or you know, that has to still be a big reason why you've had such a successful football career.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because with four boys, you know, it's two on two everything. So the teams always are getting mixed up, and it always allows us to kind of get after each other. My mom is obviously a really tough woman, and we have had our battles around the house. I remember my mom was excited about first getting these new couches, and the first day that me and my older brother came in, we were wrestling in the family room, and I sent him into the couch, and we broke it on the first day. So we spent a little bit of time fixing that up, but it's funny because not only were we football players, we were all wrestlers too, and it really gave us a opportunity to actually compete with each other. I remember my older brother was my wrestling partner my sophomore year, his senior year, and then my senior year, me and James would go after it a little bit. So that too has kind of let us really compete with one another. And it's kind of funny, the two-on-two setting, basketball, football, whatever it was growing up, we never had to rely on having anyone else there. The four boys could always get after each other. So
give Princeton fans the early scouting report on your brother James, because I know it's somebody that the coaching staff, I mean, look, freshmen have to kind of figure it out, and he's doing that. But what is your brother? What kind of player can he become? I know he's right in that linebacker spot with you.
Yeah, James. Obviously, if you look at him so far this year, he's had a tremendous success working his way into a special teams role. And he's a kid who. I think that people never really gave him a chance because of his size. But if you look at it, I mean, he had a more successful high school career than I did. He's really grown up to be a tough, hard-nosed football player. He's a tremendously strong kid, and he works hard in the weight room. And I think that he's really bought into his role as a special teams player. He looks back and he sees guys like myself and Mark and Luke who kind of went back and early in their careers made a name for themselves on special teams, running down and giving it their all. And he's really bought into that, and he's looked good. He's coming off a game where special teams player of the week, and it's good to see him working like that, getting out there and getting on the field and making plays when he has an opportunity.
Let's talk about your role, because obviously it changed dramatically this year with the graduations of Katarius and Rohan. You move from the strong side into the middle, and it really, you know, the early chemistry that you had with Mark Fassati, it was really apparent, and I was surprised at how quickly the two of you connected. Obviously, that changed with Fassati's injury, but just kind of evaluate your first 4 weeks and then, you know, now how it changes, you know, with Mark's injury.
Yeah, I think me and Mark, as I moved inside, it was kind of easy because Mark was so experienced and so well-versed at the position. He was really able to kind of teach me as I went along. And obviously, I had a different opportunity than some of the other kids in the rotation because I was kind of thrust into the position, and I was given reps during spring practice to really figure it out. And if you go back and watch the tape, you see that's apparent. You see a lot of the mistakes. And I remember watching the spring ball tape during the summer and just saying to myself, I still have a lot of work to do. So going through camp, it was really about kind of establishing my play. And I think Mark really took a lot of the load off of me in terms of the calls and everything. But as we kept progressing through, I think I had a good sense of the defense as I was playing outside linebacker. I think the way I learn, I always try to have a full sense of the defense. So I kind of always know what's going on behind me, always know the fronts in front of me. And that's kind of allowed me to I think be comfortable with all our calls going through, and that made it a little bit easier to kind of be thrust into this new position.
Do you feel like, you know, now that, you know, maybe you are the most experienced guy in the middle, that, you know, you have to be, not only are you kind of growing, but you have to make sure everybody else is in position? Like, do you kind of like that role, or do you feel like, ready or not, you know, I am ready to take this over?
I think as we get that out there on Saturdays, if you look at the rotation, we all take our time during the week very seriously in terms of our practice reps and our meeting reps, you know, watching film and getting up on the board. So I think by the time we get out to the field, there's really no question. John and Jack and James and the rest of the crew are really smart kids, and as we go through, it's not like I'm out there making all the calls. We're communicating, and it's a give and take thing between us. And it hasn't been unreasonably difficult to kind of move from talking with Mark out there on the field early in the season. Me and John would be out there at the same time. Me and Jack would be out there at the same time. You know, Jack and Mark would be out there at the same time. So Coach Thomas has been. Has been allowing us to play with each other through practice and through games, so we have that experience out there playing with one another. So it's made it a little bit easier.
You know, I felt like with this defense in particular, with all the changing, you know, graduating seniors and a couple early season injuries, that, you know, this defense had a chance to make a really steep improvement, just because you're going to have that on-field chemistry that you were going to get on Saturdays, and this defense could make a big jump. And I think we've seen that, you know, last week, you know, until once it went up to 50-10, you know, maybe it let down a little bit. But are you feeling like, you know, we're seeing what we can become, and now that we're in the heart of the Ivy season, we're going to be a different defense than maybe we looked even 2-3 weeks ago?
Definitely. I think that as we've been going through, we've been putting different things out there on tape that you know, teams have come to attack us in different ways, and that allows us to learn pretty fast. Obviously, there's not a ton of experiences having a season under your belt, mm-hmm. but there have been guys who've been playing these positions for a while and have known this defense and been learning it for 3 to 4 years. So I think that that every day we're really growing, and all these past four games have really given us kind of a list of things that we need to take care of, and I think that allows us to grow. And obviously, as you work through the season, your goal is to get better every week, and to do that, we really have to focus on those things that teams have kind of been attacking. So last week, as we saw, they Georgetown came out and tried to throw it to the perimeter and throw it down the field, and only ran the ball once. So it gives us a sense of, as linebackers, we got to get better with our drops, and secondary, we need to get our eyes right, get to the quarterback, get our hands up as a D-line. So we have things we can work on every week. So I think we'll continue to grow with that and kind of see the culmination of it as we build through the end of the season.
Saturday, you head to Providence, a place that is historically tough for almost any Ivy League team to win. You know, Brown, they've been good at home so far this year. Seem like a pretty balanced team early on film. I mean, what have you seen that's impressed you, and kind of how much do you look forward to, you know, one of these long road trips, knowing it's the start of the, you know, like the really the heart of the Ivy season, kind of see where you are in this league?
This Brown team is going to come in and test us like they always do. They you really appreciate a team that's going to come out and play you very hard, and this Brown team will come and give us their all, and we love seeing that. It's brings out the competitor in you. They're going to give us a lot of different looks. They're going to be running the ball and then doing everything from trying to run power at us to spreading it all out and in empty formations. So it's kind of both ends of the spectrum. They're going to be attacking us, so and playing hard. So it'll be a cool experience playing them, and a good test for our defense. And as you said, going on the road, it's a pretty good feeling being on the road, because football is your focus. You lose all the distractions of campus. You're in the hotel the night before, and you really have tunnel vision on the game. So it's really a neat experience being able to travel to these venues and kind of really lock in. It's almost like being a professional football player, you know.
Back with Cody Cruchel. Quick look back at last weekend before we get to week 5 and the start of that Ivy League stretch to finish the season. You know, the Georgetown game, I thought that, you know, the outside of those first
5 to 10 minutes where, you know, it actually started to get a little scary. I thought this team did what it needed to do. You know, the score is probably a little closer than it should have been. It's a little similar to the fourth quarter at Lafayette. But, you know, offensively, this team, when it rolls, it really rolls.
It's one of those games where if you didn't watch it, if you didn't comb through the box score, if you just looked at the final score, you have no idea what kind of a football game this was. 10-0 Georgetown, 50 consecutive points for the Tigers, and then 3 touchdowns in just over 7 minutes for Georgetown. But, you know, I think you saw what this Princeton team can do. They did a little bit of everything. 4 passing touchdowns, 2 rushing touchdowns, interception return for a touchdown. They got 2 points on a safety. They blocked a field goal. They did a little bit of everything. And granted, it's Georgetown. It's not a top-notch opponent, but I think heading into Ivy League play, you have to feel pretty good about most aspects of this team.
You know, 2 weeks ago, the Columbia game, it was, and he admitted it after the game, it wasn't the best game for Chad Kanoff. You saw against Georgetown what he can do when he's on. He can throw every pass. I mean, this is why NFL scouts have come to look at him. He throws every pass that an NFL quarterback has to throw. And he puts them on the money, and now he's got 2 receivers that he has a lot of confidence in Carlson and Horsted. And unlike past seasons where it was a lot of 5 to 10 yard patterns, keeping, you know, a lot of crosses, they're running things down the field, and that opens, it's going to start opening defenses up, which should help the run game.
You look at Chad Kanoff, 73%, second in the nation at the FCS level in completion percentage, and you look at that number and it's deceiving because a lot of guys that put up that kind of efficiency, they check down. It's a West Coast offense, it's short passes and a lot of yards after the catch. You said it, Chad Kanoff, there hasn't been a throw that we haven't seen him make. You know, he can hit the deep throws, he's accurate in the short range, and he's helped these receivers develop. And you know, it really is interesting because you have Jesper Horsted, Steven Carlson, Tiger Besh, really 3 very different types of targets, and that's a position where we had a lot of question marks coming into the season. And is there a position outside a quarterback that you feel better about on this Princeton team? I'm not sure.
No, you know, he was terrific, and one thing we talked about after Columbia was, you know, some of the red zone issues, and we saw the use of Graham Adamitis there, 2 touchdowns, and we get to this in our next segment with Mike Willis. But, you know, that's another target now and something that teams have to think of, because now when you start to move into Ivy League play, you really have to be scoring touchdowns. I mean, that was one of the keys for Princeton last season, was once they got inside the 10, and look, everybody knew why. John Lovett was going to get the ball, he's going to score. Okay, so that option's not there right now. You're still going to have to figure out ways to get into the end zone. They didn't do it against Columbia. They did it last weekend against Georgetown. Moving forward, they're going to need to do it again, because this defense, while improving, and I do think it improved, you know, that 30 points against Georgetown, a little deceiving. They had the punt block. They had the return touchdown on the fumble. You know, that score is probably a bit deceiving. But this defense is still young. It's still kind of finding itself, and it's going to have a couple games where it's going to be a shootout, I think.
We saw this last year, and mainly in the secondary last year. The first 2 weeks, they gave up over 400 yards through the air, and then the final 8 weeks of the season, it was one of the best pass defenses in the country, holding opponents under 200 yards. You have to look at all the injuries. You have to look at all the youth, and that's, you know, really gives you some reason for optimism in the secondary. C.J. Wall didn't open the season as a starter, and now you look at it heading into the midway point, heading into Week 5. 2-time Ivy League Defensive Rookie of the Week, has 3 interceptions tied for the national lead. And you're seeing Trevor Forbes, who had some early struggles, develop into that nickelback role, and DeLon Stallworth, who had some early struggles, come up with 5 tackles, a career high this past week. So there's not a ton of depth. There's a lot of experience in the defense. You know what you're going to get up front with a couple of these guys. And the players that you need to grow and develop are doing that.
I think it's a little dangerous to compare the pass defense this year and last year, even with the early struggles last season, because those were still seniors. Those were, you know, you knew what you had in Dorian Williams. Nobody understood what they had in James Gales. James Gales was a senior. He was in the system a long time. He broke out last year. C.J. Wall maybe becomes that player someday. Dylan Stallworth maybe becomes that player. I don't know that they become that type of defender this year, but they looked more confident. They looked more sound. You weren't seeing Georgetown receivers breaking away. And I think, you know, it's just not going to be as suffocating a defense as it was last year. You just can't give up those big plays that haunted you that previous weekend against Columbia. And, you know, you go into a game this weekend against Brown, a very physical team, a team that wants to beat you on the offensive line and on the defensive line. And offensively, Brown has had, you know, it struggles at times, but it's also a team that knows what it is. And if it can establish that run game, it's going to open the play action. And that's where Princeton had some troubles.
Yeah, it's interesting. You look at Brown, they are very young at the skill positions. They sort of have an unsettled quarterback situation if they do go with the freshman Jonkey under center this week, which, based on last week, there's a chance they do. Third starting quarterback for them potentially in 5 weeks. But you can make the argument their best running back is a freshman, Darius Days. He was an Ivy League Rookie of the Week a couple weeks ago. He's their leading rusher. And then they do have big play threats at receiver. They have three sophomores and a freshman, Scott Boylan, who's been maybe the best return man in the Ivy League this year. But, you know, guys who are big play threats, and we saw that hurt the Tigers against Columbia. We saw them do a pretty good job against those big play receivers against Georgetown, and that was really an area where you thought it might be a mismatch in favor of the Hoyas.
You look on the defensive side, and you know, I have seen enough games at Brown to know just how physical and how much they want to be in your face, kind of assert their will, and they have really one of the poster childs for that kind of defense in Richard Jarvis. First-team All-Ivy last year, already has five sacks, and one of those players that, and we see it with Kurt Haluba, okay, one of those players that you know the offense has full focus on. So, you know, you're getting double-teamed, you're getting chipped, you're getting everything, you're getting the play moved away from you, and he still is causing havoc through four games. So how Princeton matches up with him, and you know, do they line up Jarvis inside, outside, you know, do they move him around a lot? I'd be really interested to see how he matches up against a pretty experienced Princeton offensive line, whether he and Swigert go up at all head to head. I think that's going to be a fun matchup because, you know, like any quarterback in the world, Chad Kanoff with time, you feel confident. Chad Kanoff, you know, running for his life, then things get a little scary.
Talked a little bit about it this week with Bob Cerace, Dewey Jarvis on the end. You know, not only can he get to the quarterback, last year he had 18 and a half tackles for a loss that led the Ivy League. Four games this year, he's forced four fumbles, so he doesn't even have to get into the backfield to be disruptive. And if you do put him in double coverage and you put two guys on him, then oh yeah, you have two seniors and some all-conference players and a big 300-pound junior right up the middle you have to contend with. So, you know, you do kind of pick your poison, and you're right. It's that physical game every year, and, you know, you hope you don't get too beat up, and you combine that with the fact that it's on the road, a place where the Tigers haven't had a lot of success. You look at it on paper, Princeton's 3-1. They're the defending champions. Brown just went down to Florida and got outplayed and lost to an 0-5 team in Stetson. Completely different game in conference play at home for the Bears.
Especially for two 0-1 teams. Two lost teams, they don't win the league. It hasn't happened since 1982. Now you'll have two teams that are kind of backs against the wall in a league that is pretty funky right now. You look at the preseason poll. The teams that were picked 1-4 are 2-4. The teams picked 5-8 are 4-2. It's been weird. And, you know, you win this weekend and, you know, we'll see what happens. Penn, Columbia. I mean, you could be one team ahead of you in the standings with a win this weekend. So, it, you know, everybody's still in it. But, you know, this is, you are now officially backs against the wall.
If you stay within one game of whoever's in first place and there's still at least a week to go in the Ivy League, you have a chance. So for the Tigers, you do have some time. This is the right season if you have to make up an early loss.
Right, but this is also, you know, 0-2 is a different story, and both teams are facing it. I think it's going to be a fun one to watch. These games in Providence are tend to be wild. The first 2 to 3 minutes, we've seen some crazy things happen up there. You know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how Princeton comes out, because they've had some slow starts, and I don't think you can go do that in Providence, you know, dig yourself a deep hole as they've done before and get away with it. It's going to be a 12:30 start on the Ivy League Network on Princeton's TuneIn app, and you know, the first of four road Ivy League games to end the season. Let's get to our final interview of the day. I had Mike Willis in. He is the, you know, part of Princeton's last two championship teams in 2013. He was a player last year. He was in his second year as an assistant coach. He's now the assistant head coach and the tight ends coach, somebody who has overseen Graham Adamitis' development into the offense, and somebody who gives some thoughts on this Brown team. Let's hear now from Mike Willis.
Mike, we saw what Graham can do in the red zone last weekend. You know, we saw hints of it last year as well. Can you talk about his progression over the first 4 weeks? And then, you know, what will it take to kind of expand his offense, you know, to kind of be from the 20 to the 20 as well as the red zone?
So, first off, Graham's done a tremendous job growing as a player. He obviously had a varsity role last year, but really took it upon himself with the graduation of Scott Carpenter, who was a three-time All-League player, to take the bull by the horns. He had a great spring. He stayed around during the summer and put on muscle mass, shed fat, all the things that you expect a young player to do as they enter their years as an upperclassman. And you're exactly right, Craig. He had always demonstrated from a young age an ability to be a significant factor in the red zone. So that was something we carried forward. He is a weapon down there, both as a blocker and as a receiver. And I was happy that the coverage in the front and the great decision by our quarterback and the great blocking by our offensive line dictated the ball get to him, because it's always nice to see a kid's hard work pay off in that regard. And he's certainly someone we always consider as a potential target in the red area. As it relates to him becoming a weapon between the 20 and the 20, the beautiful part of our offense has always been that the guys who have earned the right to touch the ball do eventually end up being directed the ball. You know, in 2013, we had an All-American slot receiver, Roman Wilson, who, despite being a guy who had some limitations with his size, was the way a guy we always directed the ball. John Lovett last year was obviously a player who we found a way to direct the ball to all over the formation. So I always tell guys, both on our team and even in the recruiting process, is the unique part about our offense is the best players just tend to touch the ball, regardless of what their role is. So for Graham, he just needs to continue to earn the right to be a guy the quarterbacks trust, the coaches trust to put in good positions. Certainly took a step forward that last week, and I'm confident the ball will always end up in the hands of the guys who deserve it throughout the week.
From a slightly broader perspective, just kind of looking at the offensive developments, obviously, you know, Chad and then Jesper and Steve have gotten a lot of the early, you know, talk, and deservedly so for the way they've played. But how pleased have you been with just the overall growth of the offense?
So, first off, James Perry obviously did a tremendous job here, along with Bob Cerace, of forming the offense and the core of it, and having that record-setting season in 2013, which is obviously the gold standard for Ivy League offense across the history of the league. But I think Sean has done a tremendous job, and then along with Andy and Dennis and Jamel Matunga, our new running backs coach who's outstanding, have done a great job putting their stamp on the things. And once again, to my earlier point, finding ways to direct the ball to unique players. The vertical passing game probably is something that more due to personnel than anything else, particularly on the outsides. Isaiah Barnes took a step forward with that, but it was not always a thing that was a hallmark of the Princeton offense. And I think the way that Jesper and Steven, again, guys who have worked hard throughout the year and over the summer, and guys who have very unique skill sets and their ability to challenge the defense vertically, it's been nice to see the offense continue to evolve to take advantage of their strengths. And then Chad is playing at a very high level, and that's also due to, as I'm sure he would tell you, the great play of our offensive line, who have done a nice job of holding up in pass protection and giving him an opportunity to have a clean pocket and direct the ball downfield.
You know, listening to you talk about that 2013 team, it's so interesting to think that, you know, instead of a coach, you were a player back then. And, you know, your transition from playing to the coaching staff has been so quick, and you've seemed like you've acclimated yourself to the job so quickly. What has it been like being such a young coach at the Division I level? And you know, where do you think the most accelerated growth has been for you over this last year?
So the transition to being a young coach is always, I think, unique. And it was especially unique for me because many players who I was friends with when I was a player on that 2013 team were still on the roster when I came back as an intern coach for the 2015 season, and as I've stayed on now going to my third season. Now there's very few left. Ironically, one of them is in my position group, but it is nice. It has been nice to see that, like I think any player coach relationship, if you work hard, if you have an ability to hopefully make the players better and earn their trust, they very quickly treat you as an authority figure and treat you with the respect that hopefully you earn by being an asset to them in their development. I would say that the thing that is most obvious is I played offensive line in college. So while I knew it was good when Roman Wilson was streaking down the field and Quinn Everly was slinging it all over the place, thinking about the mechanics of the passing game was not something that I had ever done other than a protection standpoint. So it's been fun to see the full picture of the offense, both running and passing, blocking, catching. That's why it's so fun to coach the tight ends. They're involved in every phase. And to see the to be a part of guy of a room that has guys like Dennis Goldman, who have coached Hall of Fame receivers, James Perry, who's now the head coach, obviously, at Bryant, and Sean, who's an extremely talented, bright offensive coordinator and a great guy to work for. Learning from them every day has been a privilege, in addition to being around guys like Eddie Morrissey, my college position coach, and Andy York, who's a great offensive line coach, and now Jamel Matunga, who's really brought a nice flavor to our running backs.
Between your playing days and coaching in 2015, you've made enough trips to Brown to know how challenging that team is, especially at home. You know, you look at their four games this season, they're 2-2, and it's not surprising. The two games they've won have been at home. They've always caused trouble for Princeton up at their place. And you know, when you look at them, defensively especially, I mean, the games that they've won, they've been able to shut teams down. Even last weekend, they lose a 17-13 game. I mean, that's not one you're going to pin on their defense. So defensively, you know, I know they have a couple of big guys up front. What are the challenges that they present to teams?
Well, you're 100% right, Craig. Obviously, each season is a new season with new personnel and coaches who have evolved in their own ways. But historically, Brown, I've always felt, as a player especially, and now as a coach, was kind of the gold standard for toughness on defense. They have a unique scheme, always big, tough defensive linemen who are going to charge up field, burlier, thicker linebackers who are both great at supporting the run and carrying players vertically, and then especially uniquely, versatile defensive backs who can play both close to the formation and deep, and they challenge the offense in the many different defensive sets and personnel groupings and different down and distance behaviors that they can have. And you are correct. They are really good at defending their home turf. We have not played well up there historically, but I think that's more a reflection of what a good, tough opponent Brown is, particularly the defense, a reflection of Coach Estes's longtime influence on the program, their attitude up there. And I think that the challenge is always meeting their physicality, which is a given on every given Saturday, with tremendous energy from the first snap to the last. I think when we've had success up there and had success against Brown in general, it has been because we have developed an identity as a physical offense and a physical Princeton football team. And the years where they have gotten the best of us, their physicality, which is a given on a given Saturday, they are a tough football team and always have been, has won the day. So we just it sounds like a cliche to say the team that plays the hardest will win the game, but I think that's been true of Brown Princeton football contest. The team that brings the physicality and brings the energy from the first snap to the last tends to win the game.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Original 11. A reminder that Saturday's game is at 12:30. It's on the Ivy League Network. You can also listen to it on the Princeton TuneIn app. You can search for Princeton Tigers. You can also subscribe to this podcast and get every podcast from the Princeton Podcast Network by searching Princeton Tigers on iTunes, your favorite podcast device. We'll see you next week for the Original 11.